Welcome to Blokes Don't Talk. I'm your host, Braden Anderson. Each week, we talk to an everyday man. It might be the guy over the fence. It might be your son, your uncle, your neighbour. It might just be a guy that's been through something similar to you, but you've never met. We talk about life's ups and downs and all things men's mental health. It's raw, honest, and unfiltered. And fuck me, isn't that a sexy thing in today's climate? You can find us on all good podcast platforms or connect to our social community via Facebook or Instagram. Please enjoy the episode. All right, guys, talking to a Mr. Matty Batley today. It's my go-to start to podcasts lately. That's one that I've been waiting to do for a while. Matty's better half trains at my gym and had suggested that we catch up for this some time ago, and we were finally going to get to it on the weekend. I had a good mate who committed suicide, had his funeral on the weekend, and for that and other reasons, it was probably a pretty shitty week for Matty as well. So we finally got to it. So how you going, big fella?
Ah, well, thanks, mate. Thanks.
Thank you very much for coming on. So we just originally, you've listened to a couple of these now. We try and build up a bit of a picture of what is you, so that people hopefully make some assumptions in their mind, and then we can take them on a bit of a windy path there afterwards. So tell us where it got started, mate. How old are you? Where were you born?
41. I was born in Sale, but lived most of my childhood in Maffra.
So Maffra, well, we got 17-ish k's from Sale. For those not from our region, really lovely little town. All the shops have killer customer service. It's just one of those little niche communities slightly off the highway that really, really look after each other. Strong farming community. Really nice place to pop through. So what sort of family are you from, fella?
Well, my folks are still married. Not a broken family. Got two younger siblings, two sisters, and had a younger brother. And he passed away 21 years ago, August 22.
Yeah, so again, as we sort of alluded to before, for that and other reasons, it's been a pretty crappy calendar week for us both, and particularly you, as we'll probably get to. So tell us about growing up in the local Wellington area, man. Where was school?
School was obviously Maffra, and then I went to Maffra Secondary, and in a nutshell, that was hell. Just hell until I left and went to Sale, and then that was, I had no idea life could be like that.
Yep. What year did you make the switch across?
VCE.
Yep.
So year 11.
Okay. So how big was Maffra school for people's perceptions?
I couldn't tell you the population, but it was pretty big.
Normal country high school, really. So what sucked so hard about that before you went across to Sale?
Well, the bullying. Now, for those who don't know me, I have a hearing disability. I wore a prehistoric hearing aid. Mum, in her defence, cut my hair to prevent people from looking at my little ear. And as a result, my haircut, I look like Ringo Starr. the hearing aid was an old-style bone conductor hearing aid, which is kind of like our headphones that we're wearing, went around my head. It'd fall back and make my hair into a bubble. And you know how high school kids are. If you look different, you're a target.
It doesn't need to be much, does it, let alone something like that?
So, I was a target for 4 years. So,
But much better when you went across to Sale?
I had no idea life could be like that.
Yeah.
So Sale was, wish I'd done it earlier, but who knows how things would have turned out.
Yeah, no, true. You never know, but it's lovely that it was so refreshing, I guess. So hobbies and stuff growing up, man?
Hobbies, sport and sport. I don't know, maybe it was the ADHD in me. It was cricket, football, boxing, running, baseball, whatever I could.
Whatever was available.
Yeah, yeah.
Was sure. there any sports that you were shit at?
Swimming.
Swimming? Still, yeah, me
still
too.
Still can't swim.
Fucking terrible swimmer. And hockey, I was always, for someone that was okay with, bat and ball sports, hockey, I could never get my head around for some reason. I was rat shit at it. But yeah, same. Absolutely loved any sport. So after Sale, take us through career path, man.
Okay, well, to be honest, near the end of high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. The only things I was really good at were sport and art. So I opted for an art angle, and I did 2 years at TAFE to get my diploma. Then I had a year off, just worked.
What was your medium of choice, man? What did you love within the art field?
Painting and photography.
Yeah, beautiful.
So majored in painting and minored in the photography. After that, I went to university to get my degree. And in between there, that's when my brother's accident occurred. And I went to uni only a couple months after that. Yeah, and I don't know how I passed uni looking back, but yeah.
Where was uni? Sorry, mate, I missed that.
In Churchill. Before it was Federation, it was Monash.
Understand. So, and within painting, sorry, I'm just interesting because it's something different to what a lot of the guys have pursued straight out of school. What sort of style of painting were you into? And I guess what style of photography were you into?
Well, comic style art. Loved anime and manga. So my interests leaned that way. Photography wise was always people, portraiture. So that's what I enjoyed doing. I ended up passing. Don't know how, looking back, but yeah, and to be honest, since university, I didn't go any further with the art angle.
Do you get to dabble in it at all, hobby wise, other than career wise?
Yeah, all the time. I still have mates asking me to design logos and can you draw me a picture for this? My kids ask me, can you help me with this for an art project? So, and just for shits and giggles, I'll draw in my notepad. So, just yeah.
I love it, man. I'll definitely be harassing you to have a look at some of the stuff you've done. That's really cool. So, career path thereafter, mate?
Oh, wow. I was sort of a floater. I worked at a timber mill in Morwell, scaffolder, forklift operator. It's just all sorts. I can't even think of any. But in the end, the Black Saturday fires had finished and I'd finished helping at Noogee and Cairn River. And my old man said, look, the custody centre's hiring internally. Put your name in. I put my name in. I still had to go through all the hoops. And I got the gig. So I've been in corrections now since 2009.
So always at Fulham?
No. Started off at the custody centre in Melbourne, which is underneath the Magistrates Court.
Yep.
And when G4S took over the contract, I transferred to Fulham.
And Fulham, for those not from the region, what level of security? I know there's a couple there, but take us through the facility a bit.
When I first transferred over, it was medium minimum. Now I think we are maximum, medium, and minimum.
And capacity roughly?
Around 900.
So a big facility.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So as a adult, mate, I know you've said you've managed to keep dabbling in your artistic stuff, but any other of your passions or hobbies that have continued on or any new ones?
Fishing. was a real big fisherman up until my brother passed away, and then for some reason stopped for many years, and then one day just woke up and thought, I like it too much. So yeah, I'm always wanting to go for a fish anywhere. So,
and we obviously live in a pretty incredible part of the world. If you're into your fishing, right on the Gippsland Lakes, and not even too far to go to the Alpines if you want to do a bit of fly casting as well. So
don't forget the Avon. Avon is a very underrated river to catch your redfin and bass and anything else.
Giant carp.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to mention them.
It's nearly famous for it. So I guess the only other thing, mate, to set up the backstory, your current family structure, obviously your lovely wife trains with me.
Yeah. Well, it's weird. I met my wife many years ago at a university party and then never saw each other again, and then saw her on this thing called Facebook and dropped her a line and have a look back. So, yeah, but I had two kids through a previous relationship, and three with Mika. So, yeah, five kids in total.
Slightly busy?
Yes.
Particularly during fucking homeschooling?
No comment.
No comment. What's what range are we talking? What's your oldest?
17.
Yeah.
And one.
Jesus. Busy.
Yep.
Busy. Emotionally yep. Busy. Yep. All right, man. Well, that kind of gives us, the very basic structure of your background. And I'm noticing that your and my non-alcoholic beverage are both pretty low. So may as well go to a break and we'll get on with the other stuff shortly. And now a word from our sponsor. Nah, just fucking with you guys. We're never going to monetize this. This is your resource. And blokes, this round's on me. As we move into the next section of this conversation, we're going to be asking some pretty real questions. We're going to take things a level deeper. It'll be raw, but hopefully we'll come up with some tips and techniques that might help some fellas out there get through a bit. If what we discuss today raises some emotions for you, either from something you've got through in the past or something you're currently dealing with, discuss it with someone in your life you trust. If someone isn't immediately available, or if you're quite anxious about the feelings that you uncover, call Lifeline Australia. They're available 24/7, they care, and they're very professional. 13 11 14. Alternately, have the chat with your GP. Discuss going on a mental health plan if you're having a rough time. There's no shame in it. Get a little bit of counselling. Get yourself travelling in the right direction. If the voice in our head gets a little bit negative, it doesn't magically get better. We need to introduce a professional. Someone who has a bit of rationality. Someone who has a bit of positivity. Somebody who can help us not just survive, but thrive. We need you, fellas, and we want to see the best of you. Alrighty, refreshed, toilet breaked, feeling human again. So you've listened to a couple, Maddie, and you know we don't fuck around too much in the second half, man. So let's see how we go. And I know you've got a couple of things that you'd like to share as we go through. And I can't wait to learn a bit more about you, man. So doesn't have to be just one, because I know there's a couple of things you might want to talk about. But talking about what life has brought to your doorstep, I guess. What's the worst thing that's happened to you, mate, or the hardest thing you've had to deal with?
Oh, wow. That's hands down the passing of my brother. I mean, for those that aren't from around, the 18 months prior to my brother's accident, there was a triple fatality. After that, there was another one of my mates who passed away in a workplace accident. And then fast forward a few months later, my brother passed away with his mates as well, another triple fatality. So in the space of 18 months, the local community's lost, seven of their teenagers.
And for, you know, those that have only ever lived in the city, you talk about your 6 degrees of separation in somewhere like a Mafra, you're lucky there's one. And if there's three blokes in the car or whatever it may be, there's, you know, there's one of them you know. It's just fucking, you know, the basic maths of the situation. So particularly such a tight-knit community, and then thinking that those people are also likely to have been so close to your day-to-day life, it's, you know, it's something that literally changes the mood of the whole town.
Yeah, you know? That'd be fair to say, yeah. That was, yeah, definitely the hardest. I won't go into too much detail, but especially knowing the circumstances around it, you know, I'm still left going, you know, why? You know, why go back to the bloody party? After that, I don't know, I just took to drinking. I mean, I was, what, 20?
How old was he? Sorry, mate.
16.
Yep.
So a few months after the accident, I started university. Now, I don't know what they do at uni these days, but you have an O week and it is just party. It is unreal. And I thought to myself, I'm going to love this uni thing. And it was very, very much a drinking culture. You just drank and drank and drank, and that was fine by me because that way I didn't have to feel anything, you know. So it was either you drink till I pass out or drink till I get in a fight or, yeah, go home with someone. It was just alcohol was the thing I went to. But I could hide it, you know what I mean, because, you know, university one night, we had $1 beer nights. So yeah, I'd say losing my brother has been the hardest, but as a result, I think I've handled the loss of, you know, two good mates, one a best mate, under similar circumstances, sort of helps, I guess, on how to cope. I know alcohol and grief aren't good, so yeah, if I go to a funeral or the wake, stay away from the grog.
It's interesting. Obviously had a very COVID-safe catch-up with the footy boys when the news about Lockie came out, and it was my fourth in too short a period of time, in maybe 5 or 6 years, close mate, and it's funny that you say that. It's like, you know, you try and discuss with them dealing with it maybe closely for a first time, that the, you know, the just horrible, the horrible grossness of that never really goes away. You just get a little bit better at moving through the grief each time that you kind of confront it better, I guess. And you know, because I've been through it too much recently, it kind of turned into a bit of a leaning post for the boys this week. But that also made me judge myself harshly as to maybe why isn't this beating you up more. But I guess it's like anything in life you say about it, and particularly when you've been through something like that with your brother. I'm sure it's like not another one when something happens, but you've had to deal with that at its worst maybe and learn how to process it.
Yeah, I'd agree. I just learned after – look, what was the change, the catalyst, I guess, was I was out with my mate and I just got into another fight. And he just said to me, pulled me up and said, look, I love going out with you, but – every time we go out, you get in a fight, my night's over too, and I'm done. So if you keep this up, we're done. And that just sort of made me, something in my head clicked. Okay, I got to stop drinking to the point where I hurt someone or get myself hurt. So Yeah, when there's grief involved, just stay away from the alcohol, guys. There's better ways. Just talk.
So obviously those 2 or 3 months, you're young for a start, and then there's never ever an okay age to lose a brother. That's never going to be something easy to process. But you've identified there how you can, particularly as a country boy, I went through the exact same thing going to uni, and there's suddenly just this fucking world of plentiful temptation that you can submerge yourself in. Was there a moment or a time frame down the track where you felt like you'd finally started to process losing your bro?
Probably not consciously. I think that talk that my friend gave me was a big wake up call, because I'll put it bluntly, I was a dickhead in uni. And it was his sit down, because that's what he did. He sat me down and said, "Mate, enough." And I think it was from then on that I thought, okay, I've had my 2 years of off the rails. It's time to now get back on and, to stop being a jerk. Because no one else, like a lot of other people, aren't going to know my story, why I was being a dick. But that's no excuse. You can't go around hurting people just because you're hurting.
It reminds me, it's obviously not remotely close to the important part of what you've volunteered for us there, but working, bouncing and then moving into a hospitality career, I guess, and it's probably very familiar with so many listeners who have worked in those fields, that there's just such a natural deprogression of masculinity, shall we say, when most guys go out. Like, it's just a classic, the first third of the night is about having a great time with your mates, and the second third is about trying to get laid, and then if that doesn't successfully occur, then the last third is about trying to get into a punch on to sort of reclaim a bit of masculinity, and some people step quicken up those first two steps to get to the end story. But it's remarkable how often you see it with, I guess, your more alpha guys, that it's just such a clear path every single time. Get drunk and have fun, and then try and score, and then try and be a hero.
That is spot on. Yeah, that's exactly how you described it. Go out, starting off, having a few, get tipsy, try talking to a girl, get knocked back, and then fight at the end of the night.
If it's not prying too much, man, I'm not even sure if it is asking it, but to get back into the, I guess the grieving of it, maybe that might help some people out there, because, something like a third of our listeners are the ladies in the lives of the men that we interview, which is just fantastic, but certainly the broader family, shall we say. So, losing brother tragically at 16 to an accident like that, start of the prime of his life and whatnot, what was the sort of impact on your broader family, and I guess how were you able to partake in that grief as a family, maybe, despite having to go away for school?
Well, given that I lived in Morwell, I suppose I hid. I could hide away. No one could really see what was going on, other than the person who I was living with. I recall the old man being a bit more of a hard ass prior to the death, and then becoming a bit more mellow after. My mum was the rock through the whole ordeal. Now, before the accident, I would have said, oh, my mum will crumble and dad will be the one. It was quite the opposite. So mum was really held it together, probably for everyone. I think if mum had really crumbled, we all would have as well. But Well, more than. I hope that it answers your question a little bit, because in those 2 years, like I wasn't really at home where my sisters were still at home. Like I said, I was drinking, partying, fighting, scoring, whatever. And I was only about me, you know. I was a selfish bugger, you know. What was my mindset? You know, parents, you know, they've lost a son, but they've got another one, you know. The sisters, they've lost a brother, but they've got another one, whereas I've lost my brother, you know. I shared a bed with him for a short while. I shared a room with him, you know. I was lost.
So. Real tight. Yeah. And you looked bloody similar, actually, going off the photos you shared the other day as well. Ridiculously similar features. And Mika tells me, I think maybe your youngest or one of your kids is very, very similar to you as well.
Yeah, I'd say my youngest has got very similar features. But,
So to flip the spectrum a little bit, as we do, mate, because obviously, you know, a large part of what we try and identify is how durable blokes can be and go through something like that and then, I guess, go on to lead very fulfilling lives in spite of great trauma. So what would you identify as the highlight? What's the best thing that has happened to you that life sort of brought to your doorstep?
Wow. I suppose a cliche thing to say is when a guy's got kids, they'll say they're kids. I'll say, my kids, but my wife, she, you know, has helped me out a great deal. For sure. Definitely Mika is... What's the word? I can't find the right word, mate.
Don't know, mate, but you're fucking scoring some brownie points, I guarantee it.
Yeah, she's got to listen to the interview first. So, I'd definitely say, my wife.
So take us through, I know you kind of identified it earlier, but maybe it might add relevance. Take us through, I guess, how you were travelling in your broader life when you... met her, shall we say, and okay. Re-met her, shall we say, and then I guess how you two are very much, you know, you're such a tight-knit team. It's very much you and obviously the extended family against the world.
Yep.
But you know, you've got a very special bond. So take us through how that kind of sparked off, maybe.
Like I said earlier, I got two older kids to a previous relationship, and I had moved them from Queensland. Sale, and it was just didn't work. We broke up. She got the kids, and I just said, "You beauty, single again. I'm gonna have a good time." And then I was, you know, Facebook was relatively new.
I try and explain to some of the young fellas that come to the gym about what the dating world was like before the likes of Tinder. And I mean, you know, I was fucking mid-20s when I got access to Facebook.
Yeah.
So it was a lot more agricultural to try and do some damage in that space for fellas like us.
Look, and you know that section where it says people you may know? Okay, I just saw this hot chick in a two-piece bikini holding a cocktail. I think I know her.
Or will soon.
So I sent her a message, and she just said, "Yeah, we snogged back in uni, and let's catch up." It took a bit of wearing down, but I got there in the end. So, from my original plan of being footloose and fancy partying, I married the next chick after my ex.
I think that's a pretty classic story that many men can relate to, coming out of, you know, grand ambitions to take on the world of experiences available to us, shall we say, and end up fucking falling in love with the next one that comes along and ruining all these plans of conquering.
Yes. Yeah.
I love it, man. Well, flipping back to the dark stuff, but it's also the last of the dark stuff, so don't stress too much. But we like to roll from what the world's brought to your doorstep to kind of what you've put out into the world as to, let's say, focuses of energy maybe. So on the devil's shoulder side of that things, mate, what are you most embarrassed about? What do you think's the worst you've put out there, or where you least met Matty Batley's expectations?
Oh, look, the worst, definitely during the uni years, I was a dick, okay? And every now and again, I'll have a flashback. And it's like, Jesus Christ, did I do that to that person? You know what I mean? Now, if I could just go back and talk to that Matt and just slap him a bit, I would do that. Or if I had the opportunity to ever see these people in whom I was a cock to, just apologize. I would, you know what I mean? I remember hitting a guy because he had one T in his name, not two T's. You know what I mean? That's how much of an idiot I was.
He was a Matthew?
He was a Matthew, not a Matt. You know what I
mean? Needs to sort his life out, really. You know, that's fucking ridiculous.
What was his parents thinking? So that's the type of idiocy I was at. So, and I'm embarrassed by it, but, you know, I'm not going to just push it aside. I revert back to my mate pulling me up. And, you know, if it weren't for him, I don't know, maybe I would have went on to have kept drinking and being a dickhead for longer. But definitely in terms of the most embarrassing, my uni years were. So I hope that answers the question.
I don't know if it's similar for you, mate, but and it sounds like it may well have been, or even exaggerated sense, but being a country kid, you mentioned Cann River before, so I grew up in Cann River and school through Bairnsdale. Yeah. Dad with a copper and mum worked her ass off running her own cafe, and I went away as such a sheltered kid, which I thought was fantastic. Like I really respected my parents for having got me through to basically an adult without having made any major mistakes, or certainly not tried a lot of the temptations of life, shall we say. And fucking geez, did I train wreck spectacularly once you've got this world of temptations that you're not necessarily used to, and absolutely no guidance or authority.
That was the thing at uni. There was no, we're deemed adults, aren't we? So I can drink beer, start to as long as I want, go pubbing, clubbing. You know, there's no one saying you be home at this time. It's just free to do what you want within reason.
Very true. Very, very true. And I know no doubt was at least a bigger fuckhead as you're judging yourself harshly for being, I guess, there, mate. So flipping back to the good stuff, when's the time when you've really exceeded your expectation? What do you think's the best that you've been able to conjure from yourself?
Oh, wow. I don't know. Just trying to fix myself. For example, coming and talking to you, identifying that I have a short temper, and trying to get that sorted. Identifying the fact that I've got a problem, it needs fixing, so I don't pass that shit on to my kids.
I take it in terms of what you've identified there as the best of your life. It's mainly been the times where you've been the obstacle to overcome, I guess, in terms of improving you.
Yeah. Look, in large, my wife's a big part of that. We're good communicators, so, and that's a key, one off. And I gone to EAP and identified a few issues, and it's helping, you know what I mean? And like I said just earlier, I mean, I don't want to pass these shitty little traits onto my kids, you know, because they're sponges and they're going to pick up what you put down and reflect their parents, aren't they?
It's fucking hard, man. Like, you know, and it's a juggle that's hard to convince yourself, but probably an aspect of why I haven't yet have kids is because I've never felt on top of enough of me until very recently to feel like I'd be a good role model. I think that's probably about as cleanly as I can put it. But then if you, you know, take a step back and be slightly more objective, there's plenty of worse people out there in the world than, I've probably phrased that the wrong way, but I feel like, you know, everyone's human to an extent, and people like you and I that are flawed and are trying to improve it are certainly a better role model for young people than people who are just full of their own steam and you know, proud of their faults, maybe.
I agree, but yeah, it's a tricky one because how old am I? 40, and it's at 40. Okay, you know, stop being a dick. Okay, you got 5 kids, and well, what another thing was my oldest lives in Queensland. Okay, to every school holidays. Now, not since Corona, of course. But before Corona came along, come the end of the holiday, she was ready to go. She wanted to go. And she didn't even give me a bit of attitude. And that's not my oldest at all. She usually wants to stay. You know, there's always tears and cuddling, even a few days before she wants to leave. But this time, she wanted to go. And that tore me, that broke me, because, you know, that was my eldest and I, you know, we're pretty tight, and I was just grumpy the whole time. So it was like, you got to fix yourself. It's got to get done.
So you feel like you being flat was a big part of her wanting to get back to normal life?
Say again, sorry.
You feel like you being down was a big part of why she wanted to get back to normal life?
Not so much down, like, just little things irritated me. What normal people would just go, no worries. I would just fire up. And my kids were around it. And who wants to be around that? So if she can get herself out of it by going back up north, then that's what she wanted to do. But as a result, it broke me. And it was from that decision, that incident where, okay, I've got to fix up here. Which I've been doing. So, yeah, that was definitely the incident, the turning point of fix yourself.
Other than that, I think you're being, you know, I would think it, unless she's particularly abnormal, a 17-year-old girl that have lots of priorities and distractions that tend to supersede dad at that age. Unfortunately, I think you're probably beating yourself up a little bit more. But something that I didn't ask earlier that I think a lot of people would be interested in listening to or potentially get value out of. So you talk about taking work up on employee assistance program and the options there. Take us through, obviously, without, you know, giving away specifics or anything, but working in corrections, obviously a job where you have no emotional downtime. You have to be relatively on fairly constantly and for long shifts. Take us through why that's a fatiguing job, shall we say, emotionally, to be in for the people that wouldn't have any experience with it.
Oh, wow. Now, I would have thought when I first joined corrections that everyone would have each other's back, given the environment. I'm so wrong. It's dog eat dog. That plays on you. It's almost like the prisoners have more say than what the officers do. Feels like sometimes. You know, you've got to be empathic to the prisoners, even when they're calling you a dog or a maggot or threatening you in some way. It's part of the job. If you want to become a correctional officer, get used to that. It happens. Yeah, it is. It's an emotional draining job if you allow it to be. I've allowed it to be in the past. But you can be like other officers that come on, click on, do their job, click off, and not worry about it. Whereas I'm always thinking, you know, how can I improve this? How can I get that better? How can we be more efficient? And when I have these ideas and I take them to whoever, and it's just knocked on the head before it's even explained to them, it brings you down, you know. I mean, I went in to corrections all bright-eyed and enthusiastic. I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to do this. I finally got all the tickets, and now, because of what I mentioned, I just handed them all back. I'll just be that guy that clocks on and clocks off.
It's really odd, and I don't think people from outside would understand, or certainly not assume, in those highly volatile situations when I was, you know, back working in some pretty violent venues or doing ESO work on mines or whatever it may be, that far more fatiguing than, well, at least for me, and it sounds like similar for you, far more fatiguing than the fact that random strangers just hate you or want to kill you for no good reason, is the aspects of work where that camaraderie, that sort of environment develops, aren't replicated or displayed. So in terms of when you have people, the wrong sort of people who are there for the paycheck, like rock up and clock on, clock off, and do as little as possible, expose themselves to as little as possible during shift.
So just to catch you off, when I say I clock on, clock off, I'm still doing everything that I can right by the book within those 12 hours. I'm not just there to hide and cut corners.
No, sorry, I should more articulate. So the people that emotionally don't want to buy into work and workplace politics per se, there's plenty of people that clock on, clock off, who do a fantastic job and just don't buy into the bullshit, shall we say. And then there's other people who are literally there to do as little as possible, collect a paycheck and let every other bit of responsibility, potential safety breach, whatever it may be, fall onto the people that do give a fuck. But yeah, I've always found it funny in that highly volatile environment where, you know, you would think it's kind of an us against the war, us against the world morale, that it's usually, funnily enough, co-workers, administration, management, who are the things that tend to wear you out, rather than the 900. Well, you know, I'm sure plenty of the people there are lovely and respectful, but, you know, there's also going to be a lot of people there who, purely due to the colour of your uniform, despise you, want to do you harm, whatever it may be. And it was the same, you know, doing security. There'd be people I'd never met before that want to bottle me because I haven't let them do something that they feel like in their intoxicated state they should do.
Yeah.
It's funny, you can deal with the irrationality of complete strangers, but it's the people that in that environment particularly that you feel like should be on the same page as you and aren't for a self-serving purpose that really emotionally wear you out.
Yeah. I can't talk too much in case someone hears the interview and lags me. But what you've said is you've nailed it type thing. It is a real, and this is part of the reason why I went to EAP, was because of the people that I thought could assist or help or whatever, not only didn't, but didn't care, you know what I mean? So that, you know, you throw that on top of whatever underlying issue I've got, it stacks up, and then these little things that annoy me, it releases, and I, you know, release the wrong person, you know, my kids or a stranger or wifey or, you know what I mean? So only advice I can give is, like, if you're feeling like this, you've got to talk to someone. I mean, this is why your program's on the money. I feel better now just having a chat with you. Just now, thousands of other people are going to be able to listen in.
Question, a lot of people, so people react very differently to the potential avenues of help, shall we say. Some people are like, I'm not fucking talking to a psychologist. Some people would like, employee assistance program sort of a scenario where they're talking to a stranger. Some people write their thoughts down. Someone could only talk to a close friend and everything in between. So for me, I guess, as someone that's been comfortable going to counselling, that sort of, EAP feels somewhat impersonal to me and maybe daunting or difficult to approach, because I know there's another avenue for help that works for me. So, but you're obviously not in that situation and it is providing value for you. So tell us about what that's been like and what you get out of it.
Okay. First off, it when you go to one of these counsellors, it's their job to listen. You know what I mean? Now, first two times I saw a lady and we just didn't click. I felt like I was being judged, you know what I mean? So then I changed and I got this bloke and I just felt at ease with him. I felt comfortable and I'd tell him whatever needed to be said to get my head right. I think people who don't want to or find excuses not to, I think that's just ego getting in the way. I for ages, I've got no problem. I can handle this. Well, no, I didn't. I won't, because I'm still a work in progress, you know what I mean? So, if anyone's similar condition, just bite the bullet and do it. Like, just to talk to a stranger, just unload. Just after that session, you'll walk out feeling a hell of a lot better.
You never won't. You're never going to walk away and say,
"Oh, geez, I wish I didn't say that."
Yeah, because I'm a big believer, and I've probably said it too often already on this platform, but a good counsellor, a good shrink, whoever it may be, a good friend is really just listening to you for long enough, a bit of guidance here and there, but listening to you for long enough that you sort out your own knots and unpack your own boxes of trauma, so to speak. So you're never going to walk away from that without feeling a fucking massive weight off your shoulders.
Yeah, for sure. But talking to a stranger might not help everyone. They may need to talk to their bestie or their wife or, I talk a lot to my wife. Anyone who's willing to listen, really. But like you said, once you say it, you feel better. And that's the key to it, isn't it? Feeling better.
I suppose there's almost that misconception, I guess, with people that haven't been through that process at all, that putting it out there in some way is going to make it worse. But, I mean, realistically, it exists. Whatever it is that your trauma is, or whatever it is that's wearing you out, it exists. So all you're doing is having a good hard look at it, maybe, and that can tend to take some of the hard edges off it, definitely, and it can also, take out that overwhelming, just constant feeling that you've still got something left to do, sort of thing. In terms of if you haven't confronted it at all, it's always sitting there waiting for you.
Yeah. And that's when I go back to when you're grieving or feeling like shit. Drowning in alcohol is no good. It's when you feel like having a beer, talk to your missus, talk to your best mate, make time to go see an EAP bloke or woman. Just talk, Ring up Brayden and say, I want to go on your show and have a yarn. You know what I mean? Just do something, because you feel a hell of a lot better.
It's so true, mate. I was actually talking to a young guy the other day when we had the sort of group catch-up, losing the mate from footy. You're obviously familiar with the circumstances very well with that one. Yeah. And there was a young guy who's been through a lot, both what's happened to him and where he's probably let himself down as well, and doesn't want to start that journey. But for me, it's like, particularly someone like that, it's like, doesn't matter what you are or aren't ready to do. You're carrying that until you deal with it. So, mm-hmm.
It only gets heavier.
Heavier, yeah, yeah.
Until you're
well said.
Willing to.
And you know, even if you're that person, so say, man, you have got a handful of boxes, they might have a whole fucking trailer of boxes they haven't unpacked. But if you intend on being around tomorrow, let alone next week, next year, unpacking one of those boxes is weight you're not carrying around, and you get better at learning how to do that as well. So yeah. it's quicker work once you get used to taking it on, I guess. So whatever your platform is that works with you, of the things that you and I have identified there, you've never got too much going on that it's not worth starting to confront some of that stuff if you intend on being around for a while, because it's only going to take a huge load off you and very quickly.
Yep.
I would think. Awesome, man. Thank you so much for that. We're kind of into the tail end and the quicker, funner stuff, I guess. So yep. Next up, mate, who's your hero or someone that you admire? Don't say Mika, please. I'll fucking cry. I'll have to hear it for the next 3 weeks.
It's a combination. I knew this question was coming, and who actually just stands, you know, above and alone, you know, head and shoulders. But it's really a teamwork here. You know, yes, Mika's part of it, but my old man, my two pops, you know, and then we talk like sporting heroes, like. I remember as a little fellow I don't know if anyone listening that knew Simon O'Donnell. He played footy for St Kilda for a bit, and then he went to cricket. Then he got cancer. Then he beat it. Then he come back and played. And then not only that, he holds the record for the biggest six at the MCG. And I was just, this guy is unreal. So he's probably my sporting hero, along with Stephen Silvani. But from a family probably point of view, yeah, the old man, Mika, the pops, even my nans, you know what I mean? Mum, they're all there. They're all contributing. They're all doing their bit, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I hope I've answered the question there by including everyone and sporting personalities as well.
No, mate, I love it. And one of the things I really enjoyed about I enjoy a lot about these interviews, to be honest with you. I get a lot out of it, but something I've really loved lately is how often there's a similar answer to that. And for me, you know, the whole never meet your heroes thing, my twist on that is be careful who you pedestal, so to speak. So,
I'm sorry to cut you off, but they're also just to my little man, Hunter, like, I'm picking my, you know, one of the five kids out, but my little man, he's got diabetes, right, while we were on holidays. And the guy's just, shit happens. All right, okay, I've got insulin four times a day now for the rest of my life. Let's get on with it. And that's from, like, what, a six-year-old kid at the time?
That's huge, yeah.
So, you know, that... You know, Mika and I are upset, and there's this little kid strapped up with the bung in his arm and all this other bells and whistles, and he's just giving us a thumbs up. I was like, fuck, man, I just want to break down and cry, you little champ. So, you know what I mean? Shit can get hard, but, you know, I mean, it's affected him. He can't go to a lot of his mates' houses and stay overnight because the parents have got to do the injections and they're not comfortable, so he doesn't get the sleepovers. You know what I mean? And he's just taking it like a champ. So he's another one for the hero file, I guess.
Yeah, a lot of kids are just incredibly durable, man. That's really, really cool. But yeah, for me, like, the whole never meet your heroes, as in the people that you really put up there are often flawed and human. For me, it's to be, you know, very careful who you put on that pedestal, because often you're probably robbing yourself of things that you're quite remarkable at, I guess, in what you admire about other people, which kind of segues to what I normally ask next, I guess, man. What would you say is your most admirable quality?
Oh, Jesus. Look, I knew this question was coming and I still haven't been able to think of an answer. I don't know. This is a real tricky one. I don't know. I suppose I'm loyal. I don't know. I don't know. This is a real tricky one, Braden. This is a prick of a question.
I've enjoyed the squirming from you on the things that where you actually have to talk yourself up.
Oh, wow. I feel more comfortable talking about the darker stuff than I do about the I don't know, best quality, I don't know. I'll make you laugh. How's that sound? That's about it. I think, I don't
got
know.
Got a good sense of humour?
Yeah. I mean, you got to have a wicked sense of humour in the work that I do. So yep.
The dark sense of humour that people have in emergency services, corrections, law enforcement, yeah. I really enjoy, you know, the sort of things you can often see.
You got to censor a few of it when we go to barbecues and stuff that some people don't quite understand. So I've got to almost run the joke past Mika before I can say it. Am I allowed to do that?
So if I talk about shanking.
Yeah.
No, okay. No. What about throwing feces? No.
Oh, don't give me. Yeah.
Not that either.
Oh, so many stories. But anyway. Yeah.
I love it, man. I love it. So, obviously, this is probably the easier question that would be in a time when we're not under fucking lockdown. But what's something you're looking forward to, mate?
Oh well, look, we're pretty fortunate. We can still go fishing, yeah. So, I like doing that, but I'm looking forward. Pardon me. For when this COVID crap buggers off, is just going to Melbourne with a handful of mates and just ripping it up down bloody Swan Street or what? I just want to go on a pub crawl. I want to do something because that's something I do every year. I do a pub crawl in Melbourne. I pick a street and we go from pub to pub. This year couldn't do it because the restrictions were just starting to be introduced during that first wave. So, yeah, I'm itching to get to Melbourne to let the hair down.
Love it, man. I think there's probably plenty of people the same. For me, live music
as a
part of what you've just said. Can't wait to the next time. I recently had in my Facebook memories come up a good catch-up in Melbourne with a group of mates from – really good mates from Perth. And fucking hell, that made me nostalgic. I suppose what's a potentially emotive question is I've actually forgot to ask in a couple of recent interviews and I think people get a lot out of it, so I will ask – how would you describe your current relationship with your mental health?
A work in progress. First, you got to identify you got a problem. It helps if you've got a good support network that can, you know, have that mate go, hey, mate, pull up. Or missus it goes, look, I don't like the way you're talking right now. They can help you identify it, then do something about it. But mine at the moment, I'd say I'm getting there. Like, I think there's a section of the interview just before where I was telling you to cut because I think I forgot my EAP appointment today.
This is better, mate. Fuck the counsellor you haven't met. Hanging out with me is better.
Yeah, agreed. You're giving me beer. So, that sort of contradicts what I say. You know, don't drink.
Don't drink, yeah. Definitely don't drink more than two dries.
Yeah. Very true. I would say I'm a work in progress at the moment, mate, but I'm hopefully on the other end, on the brighter end of my journey.
Love it, man. Love it. You almost answered this by mistake a fair bit earlier in the interview, but we'll ask it directly. Okay. What's a piece of advice you'd give 18-year-old Maddie?
18-year-old Maddie was all right. It was 20-year-old Maddie.
21-year-old Maddie. Tell us what you're telling him.
Stop drinking, you dickhead. You're not invincible. Stop treating women like shit. Listen to your coach.
You're on this bloke a book, really, aren't you?
Yeah, I just want to sit him in the corner. Just point the finger. Now listen here, you little dickhead. This is what you got to stop doing. For anyone that was mates with me during uni and still is, thank you because I put you through a lot of bullshit. But, yeah, that's what I'd be telling My 20-year-old Maddie.
I love it, mate. And I'd say that probably resonates with plenty of people. Would he have listened?
No.
No?
No, he was a dick. I said that. He was a dickhead. I don't know. Back then I thought...
Listen to your mate when he told you to stop starting fights every time you went out.
He was a big, scary guy, you know, like 6'3", and then he'd wear these bloody big shit-kicker boots and a metal head and studs and hair. And a
few baby pins.
Just you know, grab me, sit down and pointed the finger and, oh, shit, this is serious.
Easy to listen to.
Yeah, so I don't know. That's definitely something I would have told 20-year-old Matt if I had... You know, if I had that time machine, yeah.
That fucking time machine, hey?
Yeah.
It was actually a friend of mine put up a post about them going to a music festival last year. Actually, I think it was earlier than that, maybe 2017. It had obviously come up in their memory, so they commented, and I was like, fucking give me a time machine so we can... I didn't even care what the music was. It's like there's beer music and humans having a good time. Let's hit that shit up.
Yep.
We're going to blitz through that, mate. As you... No, from the couple you listen to, tend to turn over the mic to end things and either discuss a topic that you're interested in the current climate or blatantly ask me a question, I guess, to turn the tables. And
yeah, okay. I come in knowing this question was coming but not having a question for you. But in light of what's happened recently locally and the impact that it's caused, and I hope I don't upset anyone when I bring this up, but in light of Lockie, would you change format of your program? Would you go out looking for people to interview as a result of what's happened locally now? Because look, I remember you from the footy club, Lockie, like it was just to me like a little gentleman, even though he was a big fella, you know what I mean? There was no ego about him. Always said g'day, and never would have predicted this. And I know you're good mates. So, does this incident change how you go about the program now? Do you go seeking out people to interview that you normally otherwise wouldn't? I don't know.
So, a couple of things tie into this. One, I'll be intentionally vague because for people that listen regularly, probably give it away way too easily, but someone I had interviewed who probably was the most on top of their everything of the guys that I'd interviewed touched base with me again this week when I guess, let's say, life has found him a little bit and he's having to be as vulnerable as most of the interviewees have been at their time of interview, shall we say. And the reason I'm digress to mention that is for me, we're speaking to this about my footy boys where two of the guys, as you've kind of touched on outlining there, it was really, really hard to see this one coming. Now, you probably had similar circumstances, but for me, three of the four guys in my life have killed themselves in the last half a decade, shall we say. At least three of those, even retrospectively, you sat there like, how the fuck did that happen? You know, like, you know, had all these things going for them and seemed happy and blah, blah, blah. Normal circumstance, a lot of people would unfortunately be used to saying in the debrief of a suicide. And for me, as I tried to explain to the footy boys, I guess, as someone that had been around that a lot, but also someone that had bottomed out in my 20s and been at risk of that, shall we say, that there's nothing hugely obvious that people will often miss about someone that's at risk of killing themselves. You know, it's no one's born with a suicide gene. People can go from being entirely on top of things to in a real dangerous situation in a couple of months with the wrong stimulus, particularly if they haven't had to confront much of that growing up. Not saying that that's specific to the circumstance, but, you know, we're real keen to beat ourselves up as friends of someone who has taken that path. And it's not also, it's not always, it's often always, sorry, it's often not the case that there was a great deal of warning, shall we say. So for me, it didn't for a second change the way I go about this, but the fortitude with which I go about this, I was probably, when this happened, at a point where there was a week that I hadn't even bothered to put up an interview because I was changing jobs and I had some stuff happening with my own life that were, I guess, significant distractions. Then Lockie happened and I was like, no, this is absolutely why I do this, so that enough people are hopefully out of your and my and the other gentleman's vulnerability feeling comfortable putting their hand up when they're not doing okay. Because I think that's the only way. Like, I used an analogy when I was talking to the footy boys last week of that, if you have, say you have an emotional spectrum and one is just absolutely fucking flying and 10 is dead, shall we say, that most people, despite what the media reports and stuff, aren't victims. So most people could be, you know, a 7.5 or an 8 on the shitness scale, and they're not wanting to be broken. So they're, in their mind, in their conversations, having a shit week, but feel like I'm going to be on top of things soon, you know, even if they're quicksanding, so to speak. So if you think that, you know, you're 80% shit and you're still outwardly portraying yourself as fine, just having a couple of rough days or whatever, and if you think in that sort of spectrum that maybe 9, 9.5 is really fucking in trouble, like seeking help or starting to think about the way out, there's not a lot of room there. And we're all busy and we might miss each other for a couple of days, and it wouldn't take much for that, you know, that one or two up on the gauge and someone to be in a lot of trouble with there having been no real warning. So
do you think do you think now you'll have more guests?
Oh, well, I'm in a fortunate position at the moment where I've just finished up my job a couple of days ago, and what I'm going to take on next probably isn't starting for 5 or 6 weeks. So I'm literally taking on as many interviews as I can, and that might result in bi-weekly releases rather than once a week. But what it has, other than anything else, made me very confident of is that there's real value in this, and that I'm going to keep doing it. I want to interview 1,000 men is what kind of clicked to me the other day, but certainly I want to do 40 episodes a year. I want to keep pumping out this content so that enough little social networks, your mates, trying to think, last week, Bryce's mates, week before that would have been Ryan's mates. All these little networks, all these little communities hopefully can take away something like this, and maybe it'll reach enough of the guys that are having that 8, 9 out of 10 on the shit scale week that don't feel trapped, that it is obvious to them that there's people that give a fuck and that they can go and speak to, and that, you know, hopefully.
So did you identify, when talking to the footy boys, who was at the, you know, 8.5, 9, have you identified who they are, and you just talked to them and said, you want to come and have a yarn?
Oh, hugely. Yeah. Hugely. And it's...
And were they receptive? Were they going, yeah, let's do this? Or
unfortunately, well, that's probably also the appropriate thing to do. You know, what's happened with Lockie highlights, even if it's only short term for the group, for the importance of checking in on people regularly, but also being open to discuss things, because, you know, you mightn't be in control of your response once things get to a certain level of bad. So hopefully identify that a little bit earlier. And, yeah, there's been you know, a handful of guys that have reached out to me to catch up or train or whatever, and there's very definitely been, you know, I'm kind of slightly outside of being a coach to the group rather than a player, but they've definitely been reaching out to each other a lot more. So that's been huge.
Cool.
Well, man, that really good question, by the way. I kind of like being put on the spot with that one. That's our flow for today, brother. So as I don't think I've actually mentioned live on the feed, but my plan is to for the what will be 2021 season, I guess, to move this platform to video to coincide with Spotify and the likes having video and also to be able to have it on YouTube. So you definitely, I feel like we've only kind of just cracked the surface on a lot of the incredible experiences you've had. So definitely love to have you back closer to the new year and work on having another crack.
Yeah, I'd look forward to it.
Awesome, Maddie. So, Maddie Batley, thank you so much for today, man. I really enjoyed the opportunity to hear a bit more about you and keen for more beers and more talks in the future.
Yeah, well, I'm all for talks and beers, mate. So anytime you're ready.
Awesome, mate. Thanks, guys. Thanks for tuning in. And I really hope you enjoyed our chat with a very lovely and very honest Maddie Batley. Blokes, thanks again for tuning in. Really hope you got something out of that. Start having those conversations with your mates, with your family, with a mental health professional if you need to. There's absolutely no shame in it. If you want to reach out to us or follow along, we're on Facebook or Instagram under Blokes Don't Talk. And to listen, we're available on all your good podcast platforms. Share it with a mate. Even if you're not quite sure, worst he can do is tell you that he's not that interested. Might come back to you in a month or two and have really got something out of it. Thanks again. Talk next week.